You're listening to Vet Candy.
Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Quincy Hawley, and I'm here with my wife.
Hi, I'm Dr. Tierra Hawley.
And we are the host of the Vet Candy Rounds podcast, where we discuss really cool cases with really cool veterinary professionals.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
This show is brought to you by Merck Animal Health. And today I'm really excited to say that we've got an amazing guest, Dr. Jessica Larson, and she has a mystery case for us today. So with that being said, welcome to the show, Dr. Jessica.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, we're excited to have you here. And with that being said, can you just tell our audience a little bit about yourself as a veterinarian and as a human being as well? So also, where you graduated from, and then tell us a little bit about your personal life as well.
Yes, I'm located in Tennessee, and I am a graduate of the University of Tennessee. I went on to do an internship and then a residency in small animal internal medicine, and have practiced in various cities around the country at private practices over the years, and then transitioned into an industry position for several years, working with a pharmaceutical company, which I really enjoyed. And now I am in a position back in private practice, but as a mobile internal medicine specialist. And so I've joined a company that is growing across the country and provide specialty services to general practices in different regions. So that's been a very exciting journey over the last year and a half or so during this pandemic. And so growing a business during that time has been a bit of a challenge, but is going really well. So personally, there's lots going on. So
yeah, that's actually really exciting. And back when I was doing full-time general practice, I would have really appreciated having a mobile internal medicine specialist or any type of specialist to come into our hospital and to help us with some of the more complex cases, because I would just refer them to NC State. Mm-hmm. That was the closest veterinary school that we had. And so anything that was really complex, I was like, out of here.
Absolutely. We often have to send our patients like an hour away just to get specialty services.
Right.
And that's a lot for people. So that's wonderful that you are doing the mobile internal medicine. That's really cool.
I imagine you like travel, Dr. Jessica.
Yes. So I drive. So it's mobile just based around my range. And so I'm home at night, which I do enjoy that as well. So just like you both as general practitioners, you know, I like that interface with general practitioners in this area and providing that support. There are a number of cases that are really good fits for this kind of service. And so I see their pets in their hospital and talk with them and perform certain diagnostics and help with case management in the hospital. And that, just like you say, that expedites care for a lot of folks, or makes care more accessible for some pet owners that might not go to the referral centers nearby. So it's an interesting balance. I like it.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Awesome. Amazing. Amazing. And do you have kids? Do you have pets? Anything like that?
I do. I have two kids, two dogs, and two cats, and one husband. So I've got a full crew here, full crew at home. We do. We adopted two puppies during COVID. And so we've had puppies now the last year or so. So that's been quite a journey for us.
Okay. Wow. So have you been like an at-home teacher for your kids over the past year as well? What ages are your kids?
Yes. So my kids are in third grade and eighth grade. And my husband is a teacher, actually. And so he has been able to be home with the kids. Well, early last spring, our school district has been in person. And so the kids have been going to campus to their schools, but otherwise my husband had been able to help navigate that, so we got kind of lucky on that front. So yeah
Yeah.
That's really, really cool that your husband's a teacher, because we learned that we are not good teachers. We are not good at it.
Yeah, we have to let specialists, even in the teaching arena, do what specialists do. Okay. It's not only in veterinary medicine, but in life as well, right?
Yes.
Well, with that being said, it sounds like you're doing a lot of really cool things. And again, we're honored to have you here today. So on Vet Candy Rounds, what we do, kind of like rounds when you were in veterinary school, right? Where you would sit down with the experts. So we would be the students, you know, in veterinary school. And then the experts or the specialists, they would go over a really cool case with us. And they would have us to kind of work through that case, to ask questions and to make suggestions about what tests we would do next or ask about clinical signs. And so on Vet Candy Rounds, we kind of do the same thing, except for we're kind of like the students. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to be the instructor. And so you can ask us some easy and general questions surrounding this really cool case that we have today. And Dr. Hawley and I, my wife and I, we're going to try to figure that out. So with that being said, can you give us a little bit of background on this mystery case that we have so Dr. Hawley and I can show you what we've got?
Yes. So I have a really good case in mind, and it is one that in the setting that I work in now, so as the specialist, I'm often called in because there is a difficult case and the general practitioner would like some additional assistance and consultation. And so I often see some of these more challenging cases. And this particular guy is a cat named Max. And he originally came to the veterinarian for, he's a big cat. He's a big cat, 18, 19 pounds. And he originally came because he was eating a lot. He was begging for food all the time. He was urinating a lot. And then the pet owner noticed that he was drinking a lot. And so that all seemed out of ordinary to her. And so she brought him into her veterinarian. And those were his presenting complaints, was eating a lot, drinking a lot, and peeing a lot.
Very cool. So we got a fat cat named Max, basically. And how old was Max again?
6 years old.
He's six years old.
Okay. So that's young to middle age, I guess.
Domestic short hair.
Domestic short hair. And our main clinical signs are drinking a lot, eating a lot, and we're overweight.
How long had Max been having these clinical signs?
Oh, that's a great question.
Yeah.
At the time, his signs had been present for about 2 weeks or so.
Okay. Gotcha. And one thing I always like to ask owners when they have an animal that is overweight, I like to get a good grasp on, okay, well, what is the animal eating? And, you know, what's the activity level? Because I really don't want to make sure that we don't just have a cat that's just being fed a lot. And maybe that's why the cat is overweight. And also, I want to somewhat quantify as much as I can, because eating a lot and drinking a lot, that can oftentimes be subjective in my opinion, right? So maybe my dad thinks that the dog drinks a lot, and my mom thinks that it isn't drinking enough, right? How do you really know? And then I also wanted to know, so as you tell us the answer to those questions, were there any physical exam findings on the physical exam? But after the history, any physical exam findings?
Yes. So this cat, he, like I said, is a very big cat. And so when we give an estimation of size and body weight, we often try and quantify or classify, I should say, a body condition score and a muscle condition score in these guys. And so, right, they can be very fat, so they've got a lot of body fat, or they could be a big cat that is in good body condition. And so we wanted to ask those questions and examine those points on physical exam. His exam was largely normal. His heart and lungs sounded normal. His abdomen was comfortable. He was a body condition score of 5 out of 9. His muscle condition score was normal. He's a big cat. He's just like, he's one of those really big cats.
So you said 5 out of 9 body condition score. That's basically normal, right? And to your point, Dr. Jessica, I have owners sometimes who they'll call on the phone or they'll say that my dog is getting fat. And I'll go to do the appointment or they bring the pet in and the dog's actually skinny with ascites, right? And so they think it's fat because it's got a pot belly, but in actuality, the body condition score is like 1 out of 5. You can feel every bone, but it looks fat, right, to the owner. So that's really important to clarify those things. Thank you for that.
Yeah, so I'm trying to visualize an 18-pound normal body condition domestic giraffe cat.
I know. This is a tough one. That's why this case is fun.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy. Vet Candy Radio delivers world-class content with engaging voices and inspirational messages curated by a network of top influencers and experts. Stream 24/7 at myvetcandy.com.
All right, so what else do you have? Is it time for us to start asking for different tests that we want to do, or is there more to it before we get there?
Well, I was just going to give a little bit more information on his eating and drinking habits, because again, that's a great question to ask these pet owners, just like your example earlier. What drinking a lot and eating a lot means to one person may be different to another person. And so again, this is a big cat, and so he would require a lot of calories normally because he's bigger than your average cat. But she is feeding him small cans of food, and she is feeding him at the time like 3 or 4 cans of food a day because he just kept asking for it. So that is a lot of food, because ultimately that's a lot of calories if we did the calculation. And so and then he would drink water and empty a little cat bowl, you know, kind of one of those little bowls that most folks use for cats, and he would drink that empty every day. And that's unusual as well, because often cats, we kind of call them sneaky drinkers. So you don't always see a cat drink, even though they do. But so a cat drinking a lot or drinking excessively tends to stand out. And so she was able to answer those questions.
Okay, perfect. Okay. Perfect. And that makes perfect sense too. If you see that cat just at the water bowl, just drinking the whole thing down, that's not typical cat behavior unless you are limiting the cat's water intake. Then you get one bowl a day or something like that, right? So, okay, perfect. So that would confirm to me, and that's probably different than what he's been doing prior, you know, a month ago or 2 months ago. So those are also things that I'm looking for, the change in behavior as noticed by the owner. Okay, so thank you for clarifying that information for us. Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Hawley, I think it's time for us to start wanting to do some diagnostics and things of that nature. I feel like we got some pretty good history going here. Mm-hmm. So what do you want to do?
Yeah, so I'm thinking the next best thing would be to run, you know, full blood work and ear analysis. We need to check those things.
So what are you looking for in the blood work? And then what are you looking for sort of in the, or why do you want to run those tests?
So I want to get a good idea of the kidney function, as well as like checking all the internal organ function, and then blood glucose, all those things.
Oh, so is the cat urinating outside of the litter box or in the litter box? Did you say that increased urination was a clinical sign or no?
Yes, it is. And he managed to continue going in the box, but sometimes they do have accidents in the house.
And Dr. Jessica, is it polyuria or polakiuria? So is it increased frequency or increased volume according to the owner?
Yeah, it's polyuria. Great distinction. So it's an increase in volume in urine. That's right.
Increase in volume. Okay. Well, I think that whenever I have a pet that's urinating abnormally, what I'm literally looking for in that urine analysis, I'm looking for some bacteria, maybe some crystals, maybe, you know, signs of, you know, crystalluria or bacteriuria. So those are things that I'd be looking for in the UA. And those would probably be my first two diagnostics for sure.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
Did you know that November is Pet Diabetes Month? To celebrate, Merck Animal Health teamed up with Purina and Zoetis for the Diabetes Pet Care Alliance program. Through this program, veterinarians can sign up for free diabetes management kits for their newly diagnosed pets, including a 10 milliliter vial of Vetsulin. Clinics can enroll between September 1st and October 31st, 2021. To enroll or learn more, veterinarians can visit usa.petdiabetesmonth.com.
So excellent. I would agree. So we did those tests. And shall I give you some clues on the test results?
Sure.
Give us some clues. Yeah, give us, please do. Yeah.
So his CBC result was very normal. So red blood cell count, white blood cell count, platelet count, that was very normal. On his chemistry, his liver numbers and kidney numbers, protein levels, electrolytes, those were all normal. However, his glucose was very high. And on his urine test, he had normal concentration. So that's an important distinction. However, he had some evidence of glucosuria, but no evidence of bacteriuria. So those were the big clues that we got on his blood testing.
We're kind of thinking like maybe kidneys, right? Maybe some of the endocrine things that can cause PUPD, right? As kind of the things that we want to eliminate here. And with him having the ability to concentrate his urine, that doesn't mean that kidney function is 100% normal. But oftentimes I'm looking for maybe there's some inability to concentrate urine if we're having some true kidney issues. And then also BUN and creatinine were normal, right? With those being normal, I'm kind of getting less away from the kidney. I would expect it for it to be causing clinical signs to see some level of increase there. We had elevated, you said...
blood glucose was elevated.
And then we had glycosuria as well. Yeah, mm-hmm. And I guess with a cat, they can get that whole like stress hyperglycemia. Is that a thing, right? Mm-hmm.
It is, yes, and that's a good point. So stress hyperglycemia, and we can even see glucose in the urine in a stressed cat as well. And so that is important to try and assess the level of elevation and as much as we can, the level of stress in this cat. Now, this is an interesting point. This Max is also a bit of a grumpy cat. And so he is a little difficult to work with. So we have to, so he's a big cat that was not happy to be there. And so there's some added stress in this cat. Yes.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
First and foremost, Max, we're not friends anymore, man. Dr. Hawley and cat and angry, pissed off cats do not get along. I'm like, somebody get this cat out of this hospital. I'd rather have an angry German Shepherd than a pissed off cat. Okay, let me tell you. I guess with that being said, so we got an angry, stressed out cat with there being glucose in the urine and glucose on the blood work, elevated glucose levels. I'm definitely thinking like having diabetes on my list at this point, but I'm still not like ready to go tell the owner like, hey, your dog's got or your cat's got diabetes because of the stress element. As you mentioned, you can see these things. So we definitely want to do a little bit more than that.
Yeah. So we need to know like if this is a true hyperglycemia. And then that, I guess that's complicated if you have a cat that does not want to be there. In the past, I don't know your opinion on this, but I've sent home like freestyle Libre monitors for pets and put them on so that the owner can like collect readings at home, and then we can get like a more realistic, stress-free values, like a glucose curve basically throughout the day. That would maybe be something that I would consider doing for them.
That's an excellent idea. I think initially we did not choose that path for him at the beginning, but that comes back around later. But you're right. It's how do we determine if this is a true hyperglycemia or distress? And so in this cat, I think what we ultimately chose was sending him home after that initial visit, and then working on another strategy with the pet owner to bring him back another time to test his blood sugar again and see what value we got there.
And was that initial blood glucose reading, was it mild, moderate, severe?
That's right. Another good clue. And so in this guy, his blood glucose initially at that initial was over 300. It was, I want to say 325. So typically when we think of a stress hyperglycemia in cats, and I don't know that this is a published quantification, but generally a blood glucose in the 200s on a stressed cat, even with glucose in the urine, you still just like you guys said, you would still think, well, is that could be stress in a very angry cat. And so just trying to reassess, sometimes we can use some of the urine testing options too. So trying to collect a urine sample at home, that can also be a challenge. So not every pet owner is up for that, but that's something we could consider in him too, is just trying to check urine sugar at home when he's not stressed.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
Vet Candy IRL is an exciting podcast from the hearts, minds, and mouths of Shannon Gregoire, Tatiana Rogers, and Lexi Rodriguez. The show celebrates inspirational role models and focuses on empowerment and equality. Check it out on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and more.
So what was that second reading that you got on him when he came back in?
So the second reading was in the 400s. So that was really high. So that one's a true hyperglycemia. He was a little better.
Oh, okay. So less stress potentially and higher blood glucose, right? So we're definitely thinking for that. And so at this point, then we probably want to do something even more confirmatory. And what was the gap between him going home and coming back? What was the time for? Was it the next day?
Right. It was like 2 days later. That's right. Right. We didn't want him to go home for very long in case the high blood glucose was real. We didn't want him to go home for very long. So he just came back. Mm-hmm.
We have a confirmed case of hyperglycemia, and I guess my number one differential for a pet with high glucose confirmed, and it's probably because I don't have a ton of differentials for that, but I'm just going to say it's probably going to be diabetes. And so our test to really, I guess, confirm that long-term or that consistently high blood glucose would be two options, right? So you've got glucose curve that you could do, and then you've also got a fructosamine. And just to kind of remind me here, Dr. Jessica, with that level of blood glucose, do we want to do something to actually treat that pet before we even start to do something like a fructosamine? Or is that fructosamine, is that like a something that you want to do first before we begin any type of treating for signs?
I would agree. I think in this case, we've got a cat who we think is in a good body condition. He is active, alert. His physical exam is largely normal. He's not dehydrated. We don't have evidence of ketones in his urine. And so this would be considered a stable new diabetic. So this cat is a very good candidate to begin insulin therapy right away without more information, in my opinion, because we have signs that fit and we have a cat who is not in crisis. And so I would agree. I think this cat has diabetes and we can confirm that diagnosis fairly quickly. We can use fructosamine, and in his case, his fructosamine should be high because presumably he's had a high blood glucose for the previous 1 to 2 weeks. However, he has not gone into crisis. And so that's an important distinction. The other option, just as you say, would be to see, well, two things. We could either do an in-hospital blood glucose curve and we could confirm that he remains high, his blood glucose remains high during the day, or we could use a freestyle Libre now and send him home to measure his interstitial glucose that device gives us. But he's a candidate for insulin therapy right now.
Okay, awesome. Perfect. What is your first go-to insulin the type that you would use for a cat like him?
In a cat, I'd use a protamine zinc insulin. He is a good candidate for that type of insulin. And I would start at a standard dose. And, you know, we would work our way up if we needed to in a new diabetic. So he's a good candidate for that. So we began insulin therapy and taught the owner how to deliver insulin. Interestingly, the side note here, this cat, one of the pet owners is blind. And so she was very concerned about his clinical signs because of what she could hear him doing, she could hear him urinating more. And that was an interesting side note. And so we were teaching her how to give insulin. She has another family member at home to help measure the units, but we were teaching her how to give him insulin as a blind person. So I thought that was really, really cool. So
that is very cool. Yeah, it's impressive the type of senses that you develop, you know, when you lose something. You can't see, but then you can hear things a lot better. But did he tolerate, how did he do with the owner giving him that insulin? Was he a good boy for all of that? Did she have any troubles with it?
No, he's a very good boy at home, and she feels very confident in administering his insulin. So we began at a standard dose and began his therapy from there. So an important point, I think, to point out, to our listeners is that if you've got a cat who is otherwise, or a dog who is stable and not in crisis, then it's okay to just go ahead and begin insulin. We don't have to have right then x-rays and ultrasound and things like that right at the very beginning, because what this pet needs is insulin. And so it's okay to go ahead and begin therapy.
Is that something that should be done in hospital, I imagine, right? And do you keep them there for a certain amount of time to monitor? And do you test again a certain time frame or something like that? What's your sort of standard protocol for how you guys handle that?
So typically what I'll do is teach the pet owner how to give insulin. And sometimes myself or my technician will just give the cat the insulin right there while the pet owner is watching, because there's a lot of stress and this is a new diagnosis and new information. And so the pet owner is processing a lot as well. So we'll often give the first dose while the pet owner is watching, and then we talk through it, and then we send the pet home, and truly we have them try and come back even the next day if they can to have more of a lesson in giving the insulin and caring for the insulin and preparing with their pet. We have them practice with syringes that just have saline in them so that we can see their technique and they can gain some confidence in giving a shot. A lot of pet owners are afraid of needles, and so they don't want to give their pets a shot. And so we try and teach them safe ways to give the insulin so that they feel confident. And then again, in most cases, they can go home and then we'll have them come back in a couple of days just to check blood sugars again, just to kind of to keep touching base, because it's a lot of information, and there's more and more resources available to our pet owners to help provide support and feel like a part of a community and part of a network of other pet owners who are caring for pets with diabetes. But it's a lot for a pet owner to first take in. So we'll often walk them through that process the first week or so. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That reminds me of a case that I had when I actually was a new grad at the first hospital. I had a case. It was a dog, Uno. I remember Uno. It was like a Shih Tzu, Maltese mix, something like that. And Uno had diabetes and Cushing's. Okay, so it just made it really, really, really complex. And I was always on the phone with NC State and my instructors from vet school just the year before. Like, help me. I remember when you mentioned and giving the injections with saline to try to teach the owner. I remember teaching Uno's mom, you know, how to do those injections and things like that. And I remember her being nervous about the whole thing. So that's really cool. So you gave Max the insulin. You sent him home. You had him back. How did Max do with the insulin therapy? And how was the next set of blood work and things like that?
Well, so again, very good question. I'll throw you guys another twist here. He did well. He tolerates his insulin very well. And his clinical signs improved some, but did not fully resolve. That's an important point for our pet owners too, because we'll often use clinical signs as a gauge for how successful therapy is. And so we should expect in most cases of diabetes, in that probably 70 to 80% of cases of diabetes, they should be fairly straightforward. And we should see a good resolution of those clinical signs. And this is true for dogs and cats. There's a subset that are difficult to manage, and a subset that also has concurrent disease. So like your example with Uno. And so if a pet is not responding as we expect and their clinical signs do not really significantly improve, then we do want to keep going. So that's where we go on and we think, okay, well, what would be our next step to try and figure out why this cat, in our example, is not responding to insulin as we would expect. And so he experienced escalating doses of insulin, which prompted further testing.
Wow. Dr. Jessica, I think you bring up a great point that with these diabetes cases, it can be really tricky. And I remember from Uno's case, it was a while back, but there was a point where we had to make sure that we weren't treating the numbers as much as we were treating for those clinical signs. And I think that we had to end up settling for like a happy medium between the blood glucose level didn't go back to that normal range, but the dog was doing really well. And so we really had to gauge between not saying that, okay, if the pet's doing much better, right, and the blood glucose is getting closer to normal, that you don't have to keep adjusting doses necessarily if the pet's doing better, but the number isn't perfect. Is that something that you've experienced as well, where you kind of have to maybe settle with the numbers and the ranges just a little bit?
Yeah, I would agree. And again, this goes back to what we can do and what we can expect the pet owner to do, right? There's three people involved, or three entities involved, I guess. There's us as the veterinarian, there's the pet owner, and their capabilities and level of commitment. And I say that with all respect and love in my heart, but diabetes is a difficult disease to manage. And then there's the pet, right? And so there's these three pieces to the puzzle. And I would agree. I think if we don't have perfect blood glucose numbers, but we have a pet that is very stable and the clinical signs have improved or resolved, then that's good. That's good control for us and for that pet. And the pet owner is able to sustain that level of care, then I think we're good. That's a winning situation in those guys. So I don't always strive for perfect blood glucose numbers either. It's very much about how things are at home and how that pet owner is at home and the signs of the pet in the management of diabetes.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy.
Hey, pet parents. This is your favorite lifestyle guru, Renee Michelle, and I'm excited to tell you about my new show on Pet Candy. Join me and make some cute pet stuff. Talk about life and love and everything in between. Check out the Renee Michelle Show on mypetcandy.com and let's have some fun.
So with Max, at this point, you know, since he's not being controlled and you guys have given him, you know, increased his dose so many times of his insulin, like, what was your next step with him to get down to the bottom of why he's not responding as well as he should be?
So a routine next step would be, I think Dr. Quincy mentioned it earlier, that often we'll think of, okay, well, is there bacterial infection somewhere that is interfering with how well the insulin is working? And so we'll often think of urinary tract infections first, GI distress, so chronic diarrhea, any other signs of like pyoderma, you know, that's not very common in cats, but oftentimes, you know, we'll see something in dogs, bad ears, you know, chronic otitis, something like that, like something else that's throwing off our insulin requirement. And so we just work our way down this list of most common to least common causes of not responding to insulin very well. And so in this cat, we did regular things like we checked just regular blood testing again. So CBC chemistry, UA, still all fairly normal other than a moderate hyperglycemia was persistent. He was still, his physical exam, he was still in good condition, but this is a clue. So if you recall, the pet owner is blind. And so she feels him and pets him and loves on him. He sits in her lap. And she describes that he started to feel bigger. And so that was kind of an interesting clue that took us a little while to work out. He's still eating a lot. He's still urinating a lot and active. But as he's sitting with her and she's petting him, he starts to feel a little bit different. So that's what we had to go on. What do you guys think?
I couldn't be in left field here, and I probably am in left field, but I'm just curious, has this energy level seemed to increase over time at all? Like, he's not hyperactive, is he? I'm just kind of thinking about hyperthyroidism as something that can also cause some of the signs that we've seen, and a T4 test, or, you know, just, I imagine, be an easy thing to throw in there as well, just to make sure that's normal.
Yeah, totally agree. So that's a 100% reasonable next step. His T4 was normal, his total T4 was normal. And she reported about the same level of activity. He didn't seem overactive, kind of a normal level of activity to her.
Mm-hmm. All right, okay. So he wasn't bouncing off the wall, okay.
Yeah. So like when she says like he feels bigger, like can she like identify like a certain part of his body that feels bigger? Like is it his belly that's feeling bigger?
Well, so nope. Excellent question again. So she did feel like his belly felt bigger. But she also felt like his head and neck and kind of shoulder area felt bigger, like as she was kind of stroking him, like from the top of his head all the way down, all and kind of all around, he felt bigger. But she was not describing that he was having trouble breathing or that his belly seemed big. He just generally seemed bigger.
So at this case, I want to put my hands on the gap. I want to see if it feels bigger. Bring him in. Right. I want to do my physical exam so I can confirm that, okay, his head's the size of a bowling ball. Yes, it's bigger. You were right, ma'am. And so did you guys bring him in for a physical exam so you could confirm? And then if we're feeling things in the abdomen that are larger, probably want to do some imaging, things like that. But I'm just curious to see what part of this animal is bigger and why.
Yes, I totally agree. So she, and this is about when I entered the picture, because he became a tough case, right? Because we're trying to figure out why he's requiring so much insulin. And by this point, he was up to 16 units of insulin twice a day, which should raise some eyebrows, right? Just off the top of your head, that's a lot of insulin. So we can do the math and realize that, yes, that's a lot of insulin for this guy. And so, yes, she did bring him in, and he had a look of, so still very alert, active, hydrated, normal cardiopulmonary auscultation, comfortable on abdominal palpation. But now the veterinarian did think too, she's thinking to herself, yeah, he looks bigger to me than when I last saw him.
What was the weight? Did the weight change?
So his weight has actually stayed very stable. So he's still in that 18.5 pounds. So he looked bigger. His facial features looked more broad, and his eyes looked further apart, and his jaw looked bigger. His liver felt a little bigger. His kidneys felt a little bigger. So he did in fact look bigger to the veterinarian. And then so she did one test that we might think of next.
Eyes spaced apart.
I'm thinking of something that I'm trying to recall from vet school. Of course, this is not something I will come across with normally. Is it acromegaly that I'm thinking about that they can get? I don't know how to confirm that, but that's what I'm thinking about.
That's exactly right. Yay! That's the tricky part in this cat, is that he wasn't responding as expected to insulin, but he never entered a crisis. So he didn't enter a DKA crisis, but he just continued to require more insulin, which would prompt us to continue looking for other underlying disease. And so this is a very unique case. This is not very common, but I just wanted to use it as an example for our audience to think, okay, well, if this cat is not responding as expected, then we'll keep looking. And that's certainly where bringing in another opinion is helpful. So this cat does have acromegaly. So in that case, the blood test to consider is what's called an IGF-1, which is a measurement of insulin-like growth factor 1. And that has to do with a very small tumor in the pituitary. And so this is uncommon, but it is a cause of insulin resistance or requiring a higher insulin dose, because what's happening in this cat is he also has a microscopic tumor in the brain that is continuing to pump out a hormone that is messaging the body to continue to grow, basically. And so his organs were truly getting bigger, and his bones and soft tissues were continuing to sort of spread apart. And that did make his face look broader, and he had a different look to his face. And so so it's subtle, but this is an interesting case. And so that's confirmed through a special blood test. And then that gives us a reason for why he needs so much insulin and gives us permission essentially to continue to increase the insulin dose because his body just needs more insulin than a different cat to try and overcome that excess hormone secretion. And so there's no other real effective treatment for acromegaly. Sometimes cats will undergo radiation therapy of the brain, but that's not common. But cats that do can respond well. So this is a fun case in this cat and a good reason why he requires so much insulin.
And Dr. Jessica, is this a chicken egg type thing? So the fact that he had diabetes, is that because of the acromegaly and the IGF-1, or does diabetes sometimes lead to, and insulin therapy sometimes lead to, the body sort of, I guess, is it acquired or is it drug-induced? Like, is it iatrogenic?
Well, I think in this cat and in most cats with acromegaly, we don't start off trying to diagnose acromegaly first. I totally agree. This is an uncommon disease. But I think in this cat, the acromegaly was first, and that contributed to his needing insulin. In most cats that are 8, 10, 12 pound cats that are normal house cats that we think of, the development of diabetes is more standard. So it's more related to pancreatic islet fatigue and just the pancreas isn't secreting enough insulin. And so that's a much more common form of diabetes. But in this particular cat, I think the acromegaly was first.
So Basically, they start to grow a pituitary tumor, and then as a result, that's what happens. Is this a genetic disorder?
No, I don't think that there is a genetic component necessarily to it. He's a big domestic short hair cat, so it's more of a kind of an unlucky, I guess, kind of condition for him. Yes.
Wow. So how did Max end up doing overall? Once we increase the insulin dose, is this an happily ever after story?
Well, he is still doing well, and he's up to 22 units of insulin 2 times a day. That's a lot of insulin, and he is so far remaining a happy cat, and it's just something where we monitor him down the road for complications of either the diabetes or the acromegaly. But for right now, he's doing well.
Okay. And so you can probably expect that over his lifetime to have to keep increasing that insulin dose, or do you think that they can eventually level out?
No, I think we should expect to continue to increase his insulin. And this is where we then did use a Freestyle Libre, which is a great point. That's, a great tool now that a lot of folks are comfortable using. And or an interstitial glucose monitor, I should say. And he responded well to an increase in insulin while using that device and allowed us to monitor his glucose at home. And we just made adjustments. And so he may be a case where we periodically do something like that to check, and we monitor him for any other signs of regular cat disease, like heart disease and kidney disease and that sort of thing. So we just monitor him routinely.
Excellent. Well, this has been a really cool case. And that's why I love Vet Candy Rounds. Mm-hmm. We get to come on with the experts and some of their mystery cases, the diseases that didn't read the book necessarily, these zebra mm-hmm. cases that I would never expect. And I would certainly be calling for an expert, calling Dr. Larson and saying, hey, come help me, please. Help me, please. But thank you so much for sharing this case. Yes. And I'm glad that Max is doing much better and that we've kind of figured this out so that Max can have as normal of a life as possible. And I think that sometimes that's my overall goal as a veterinarian, to help animals and their owners to just live normal lives, or as normal as possible in this case. So definitely thank you for coming and sharing your knowledge and your wisdom about diabetes and internal medicine with us here today. It's been very informative. And now I have another thing on my differentials list for sure.
Yeah. I have never actually heard of a real live acromegaly case until today. So I can just see that picture in like the textbook, and it's like the picture of the cat with acromegaly, and that's all I'd known about. It's cool to learn about a case like that.
We'll be right back with more Vet Candy. Vetsilin is with you for life. Vetsilin, porcine insulin zinc suspension, is the first veterinary insulin approved for both dogs and cats. Vetsilin is also the first to offer you a choice on how it's administered, insulin pen or syringe. For more than 25 years, Vetsilin has been helping keep diabetic pets regulated. Check out Vetsilin.com for more information. Important safety information. Vetsilin should not be used in dogs or cats known to have a systemic allergy to pork or pork products. Vetsilin is contraindicated during periods of hypoglycemia. Keep out of reach of children. As with all insulin products, careful patient monitoring for hypoglycemia and hyperglycemia is essential to attain and maintain adequate glycemic control and prevent associated complications. Overdosage can result in profound hypoglycemia and death. The safety and effectiveness of Vetsilin in puppies and kittens, breeding, pregnant, and lactating dogs and cats has not been evaluated. See package insert for full information regarding contraindications, warnings, and precautions.
Yes, well, Dr. Jessica, are you on social media? Where can our listeners or our audience find more of Dr. Jessica? Are you on Instagram or Facebook, or do you do anything like that?
Yes, I have a Facebook page for my mobile service here in the Nashville area. So it's Moves Nashville as a Facebook page, and myself and my technician, we post fun cases and pictures and anecdotes and all kinds of fun things.
Okay, excellent. So that's Moves Nashville. And I imagine if they go to Facebook and type that into Facebook search bar, that they can find your Facebook page there. And we will also put this in the comment section of this podcast and all that jazz. And do you have a website as well?
I do. Well, as part of Moves, as a national company, it is vetmoves.com/refer/Larson. So that's me in the Nashville area.
Perfect. That's awesome. And hopefully people will start to utilize a service like that more frequently, because I think that it does add a level of improved client interaction to have a specialist come to the hospital, as opposed to having to send someone off elsewhere, and you've got to do what you've got to do. And they both certainly have their benefits, I'm sure, referring out to an actual specialty facility versus having a mobile specialist to come in. But I think it's great to have both options for sure, right? Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Holly, what do you think about today? That was awesome, right?
That was incredible. Yeah, definitely. Thank you so much for coming and joining us on the show today to tell us about this really cool case.
And with that being said, this does conclude another episode of Vet Candy Rounds with the Hollies. And thank you once again to our guest, Dr. Jessica Larson, for that amazing mystery case. And don't forget to follow us at My Vet Candy.
Vet Candy.
Vet Candy.
Vet Candy.
It's Vet Candy Radio.